Welcome to the Clear Admit MBA Admissions Podcast. I'm Graham Richmond, and this is your wiretaps for Monday, July 20th, 2020. I'm joined by Alex Brown. Alex, how are things?
Very good. Thank you, Graham.
So there's a ton going on as usual. No rest here. I wanted to mention that tomorrow is our, I guess, our third class in the MBA Admissions Academy, and it's going to be all about writing essays to get into business school. And I'm really looking forward to this. I think we have a lot of good advice to impart, but also the essays are this sort of mystery, I think, to a lot of candidates, in that, you know, not everyone does a lot of writing in their day-to-day work. And so there's a lot of questioning around, like, how do you approach these essays? Are they a creative, kind of creative exercise? Are they a very kind of straightforward thing? And so I think we're going to get into all the things that need to be, sort of taken into consideration when you're dealing with essays. And yeah, I don't know if you're looking forward to it, but I definitely am.
No, absolutely. And and hopefully we've got a couple of surprises up our sleeves to address. So yeah, no, it should be a really fun webinar, and hopefully very instructive too.
Yeah, agreed. So the other thing that's been happening is there's just been a lot of movement on wait lists, and schools kind of still trying to put together their class for the fall. I wanted to mention that, we talked last week about the U.S. immigration authorities kind of setting up a rule that said if a school's online, then the internationals can't be in the U.S. Or can't have a visa. And so fortunately, following a lawsuit that was filed by MIT, Harvard, and I think about 20 other leading universities dove right in on that to join in the suit, the U.S. announced last week that they're pulling back that restriction, and that if classes are online, internationals can still have a visa and be in the U.S., which is really good news. But what do you make of just what's happening generally on, you've been watching Livewire, and there's been a lot of movement, even at very top schools. So can you give us just an update on that?
Yeah, I mean, typically we talk about this idea of the summer melt, Graham, from year to year, where, you hit sort of July timeframe and schools start going to their wait lists a little bit for the final time to sort of top up the enrollment numbers for their classes as they look at sort of, matriculation numbers and so on and so forth. But obviously we're in extraordinary times this season. We've seen a lot more activity on Livewire as a reflection of these times. And we saw last week at least two of the very top schools go to their wait lists. I would suggest probably a lot more aggressively than certainly a lot more aggressively than we've seen in the past.
Yeah.
Whether some of that's a reflection of we've got more activity on our site at this point versus previous years might explain some of it, but I don't think it explains the whole picture. So I did a quick count before we recorded this, and we're recording this on Wednesday of last week, so there's a few more days to go, but I did a quick count. We saw more than a dozen, maybe dozen and a half waitlist admits from Wharton, and a number of waitlist admits from Stanford. And what occurs then, Graham, is those folks that then, matriculate at those programs are pulling out of other programs, and this is what we call the summer melt, Graham, the domino effect.
Yeah.
It's going to get very interesting in the next couple of weeks. Over the next couple of weeks, I should say.
Yeah, so I want to ask you a question. One thing that's been interesting is, so I don't ever recall a year in which, a little flurry of Stanford waitlist admits has materialized in the way it has this year. So they're clearly going to their list. And I presume it's, in their case, it's probably not because people have decided to go somewhere else. It's probably because some candidates are just deciding they're unable to come.
Correct.
And so, I would assume in Stanford's case. But what do you think, one thing that's interesting is there hasn't been any, at least I haven't seen a lot, if any, movement with HBS. And so why do you think that is?
That's very interesting. I think HBS made some very big decisions very early on in this part of the admission cycle to reduce its class size. You can correct me if I'm wrong, Graham, if I'm remembering correctly. Reduce its class size, get its enrollment numbers in the bag, and so on and so forth. It allowed people to defer quite freely, got that dealt with. Whereas I think some other schools maybe didn't make those decisions as quickly and as firmly, and are now getting those deferrals coming in because, you know, frankly, several, you know, lots of students aren't able to attend based on COVID-19 related situations. So perhaps that's a reason why Stanford's had to go to its wait list and Harvard hasn't. Those two schools don't go to their wait list because they're losing candidates to other schools. I mean, that's, they're at the top of the heap. Is that the case for Wharton? Wharton may have lost, well, Wharton didn't lose anyone to other schools to this point. They might lose one or two to Stanford now as a result of what's going on or what went on last week. But frankly, Wharton, Harvard and Stanford sit at the top of this pyramid. So other schools will lose candidates as a result of both Wharton and Stanford being going aggressively to their wait lists. And I saw a couple of comments on LiveWire as I was looking at these folks that were accepted from the wait list. And, you know, one person was going to Yale, for example, and they're now going to Stanford.
Yeah.
So that's a nice pop for that. Not that Yale's not a great program. It is. So I don't want, you know, people listening to think, well, you know, why is Yale? Yale's absolutely fantastic. So it's just outside that group of M7. But Stanford is Stanford. And what an opportunity for that person.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think the thing with HBS and the reason we're not seeing any waitlist admits is because, as you said, the first thing they said to their admitted students was, you have, you know, I think it was 2 or 3 weeks to let us know if you're coming. And, you know, that was it. So it's sort of like if you told them you were coming then you're coming. You know, if you told them that you don't want to come, they would defer you. And they said they would defer you into either next year or the year after. So they have that flexibility.
Yeah.
And so then once they saw those numbers, they then decided to reduce the class size, right? So they saw the number of people. And so I think basically they shielded themselves from a lot of waitlist movement because they basically have a smaller class and they got everyone to commit, which was smart on some levels. I think we'll see how it plays out over the long run. But I think, you know, for now, they're clearly not having to go to the list. It doesn't seem like it. So yeah, this is just a really exciting time to see all this movement. And as you said, there's going to be this kind of trickle down effect as, you know, as Stanford admits someone, well, then, you know, maybe Wharton loses somebody. And then if Wharton loses somebody, they go to their list. And then Yale or somebody, you know, whoever it is loses somebody. Like, it just, yeah, there's this whole, so we're going to probably see more, another flurry of waitlist activity as a result of the admits at the top levels here.
And I do believe, Graham, that Harvard does have a few folks still on its waitlist.
Yeah, oh, they do. And I bet they will take some, yeah.
Yeah, so it's not out of the question that Harvard also needs to go to its waitlist. So we'll see what happens. But absolutely, this season has no precedent.
No.
And what we're seeing, or what we saw last week, is unprecedented in terms of the amount of movement from Wharton and Stanford.
Yeah, and I think the interesting thing about HBS in this case is that if you're waitlisted at Harvard, I'm sorry, if you agreed to go to HBS and suddenly now because of COVID or, you know, some reason you can't, they're, you know, the way that they set it up, I believe, is you can't get a deferral, right? So anyone who does drop off at HBS is going to have to reapply. But there probably will be a handful of people in that case. And so they may go to their list and fill up that way if they have to, but it'll be minimal, I would say.
Yeah.
Moving right along, we've published a couple of additional admissions director Q&As on the site, one for UCLA and one for Duke. Those are both were a lot of fun, and just connecting with both Alex Lawrence and Sherry Hubert, great individuals running their admissions offices at UCLA and Duke respectively. So check those out. And then the only other thing I wanted to mention is we ran a really interesting article about the fall and what business schools are doing, because it varies. We talked last week about how Darden decided to offer people a January start date and, you know, some people in the fall, some in January, to kind of spread things around and have more social distancing options and like less density. But then there are a number of, schools in the article we published where we're talking about like what's Wharton doing. I think MIT's in there, Harvard, a number of top schools, Chicago Booth. So interesting read. Check that out. I think it's an incredibly fluid situation. In fact, I think the article had a reference to the new rules from the U.S. government about visas, and that's already gone by the wayside because that was rescinded. So this is a really fluid situation, but stay tuned. We'll keep everyone abreast of things on the site. Let's dive in and talk about our three ApplyWire entries that we're going to do for wiretaps this week. Before I do that, though, I wanted to ask everyone that's listening to do Alex and I a favor, and that is to let us know what you think of this podcast. And for once, I'm not asking for a review or a rating. We're actually running a survey, and it's a survey only for those listening. You won't find a link to this survey anywhere on our website. It's only for podcast listeners. And you can find it at bit.ly/clearadmitpodcastsurvey. And that's all lowercase, and it's all one word. And this survey is really short. We just want to find out, like, kind of who you are and what you like about the podcast, and maybe what you don't like. And that'll really help Alex and I to, you know, kind of tweak things going forward and make sure that we're providing a great podcast for everyone out there. I will stop there. Alex, anything that you had before we kind of dive into our wiretaps entries here?
No, I'm ready to get going.
All right, let's do it. All right, so this is wiretaps candidate number one. So this person is applying to 7 schools. They don't want to start until the fall of 2022. And the schools they're looking at this phase are Columbia, Dartmouth, Harvard, MIT, NYU, Chicago, and University of Pennsylvania Wharton. They have been working in product marketing at a tech company, but they previously worked in the insurance industry, actually for several years. They have 5 years of work experience, of 4 of which were in insurance, and then 1 in product marketing at a tech company. They want to get into investment banking, and they'd like to work at Bank of America, Citibank, Credit Suisse, Goldman Sachs, JP Morgan, or Morgan Stanley. GMAT score was 740. The GPA is a 3.2. And as I said, 5 years of work experience. They're in New York. They want to stay in New York. Some other details. This is a white male, LGBT, math major from a top 20 undergrad, according to US News. And they were a college athlete and a team captain. And so there's a lot more. They actually, they did mention in their comment that it would be nice to hear Graham and Alex feature me on the podcast. And I'm hoping that if I ask nicely, it will happen. So here it is. It's happening. But Alex, you had some back and forth with them. What do you make of this candidate?
Yeah, no, very good. And yeah, it's happening. So, you know, this candidate is lots to like here. I think, you know, they work your product. Current role is product marketing at a large tech firm. You know, I reckon their experience is very strong, highly analytical, which again is sort of a bit of a, I think, a positive factor in this sort of day and age of sort of big data and, you know, analytics and so on and so forth, driving business decisions. It's kind of odd, Graham, that this person wants to go, you know, from product marketing at a tech firm, not to product management tech firm sort of route that's become very sort of sexy, as it were, in terms of the MBA admissions world. But they want to go in investment banking, and that just sounds like a very 1970s sort of move to me. But I mean, joking aside, obviously investment banking is absolutely brilliant, but and top of the line stuff, but it's just not seen as glamorous as a path, and you know, you got to work so hard and do various other things to do all that. But anyway, yeah, investment banking does still attract some of the cream of the crop, and clearly this person is wanting to go in that direction. And they made a good case for that, actually, in their notes, so I do appreciate that. The elephant in the room for this candidate is a 3.2 GPA. They readily recognise that. You know, they've got a great GMAT. I mean, this candidate's smart, Graham. That's not going to be debated among the ADCOM, I don't think, right? 3.2 math GPA with a 3.6 or a 3.7 in that final year, where you've got to assume they're taking the more rigorous math electives or whatever it might be, right? So it's not going to be a question whether the ADCOM doesn't think this person's capable of you know, surviving the curriculum or even thriving in the curriculum, which is the measure that they, the hurdle they need to cross. And I just wanted to read out one little bit from their notes, because it directly talks to this particular issue. My main concern is the lowish number hurting their rankings. And at schools like Harvard, Wharton, Sloan may not be willing to look past that. I will rebut that very quickly and suggest, for example, if Wharton is enrolling 1,000 students and one of those 1,000 students has a 3.2 GPA, it's going to have no impact on that average GPA nor the ranking, right? I mean, if they're bringing in 5 students, yeah, a 3.2 GPA is going to lower the average. But when you're bringing in 1,000 students, it's really not going to have any impact. So, you know, don't think that, you know, if your statistic is lower than the mean of the class that's coming into the school is going to be concerned necessarily that you're going to overly affect their report, you know, their numbers that they report to the rankings thing. If it has a 0.01 effect, I'd be surprised. I mean, and quite frankly, this person knows this better than I do because they're a math major and they've done a lot of analytics work. So I just wanted to knock that out. But Graham, we talked before coming on air. There is something that this student needs to do with this 3.2 GPA, right, Graham? What would you suggest that they do?
Yeah, so one tiny comment on this sort of Harvard and Stanford and Sloan like worrying or Wharton about the GPA. I mean, obviously they want people who are smart and have high, you know, high GPAs and stuff. But as you correctly point out, the impact that one person makes on the whole class is not so tangible. The other thing is just that these are at the top of the heap, these schools. So I think sometimes they're less ticky-tacky about these stats, these counting stats, you know, than schools that are maybe down, you know, in range 10 to 20 in the rankings trying to move up. As to what this person should do, I know you had some back and forth with them about should they take like HBX Core or, you know, MBA Math or do something to show academic kind of aptitude and ability to get A's. But they pointed out, gosh, I already took, you know, a lot of these classes in college and I got A's in them. And so the thing that I'm struggling with is, so they have a math major, grade school, 3.6 or 3.7 in their final year, but they have a 3.2 overall, which means there must have been some really poor grade somewhere along the way, or not really poor, but poor enough to drag down, you know, the average. And so I would want to know more about like what happened. Like maybe they just had a horrible freshman year. This person did mention they're LGBT. And so I wondered, like, maybe they came out when they were in college and struggled with that, you know, freshman year or sophomore year or whatever it was. But it would be good for me as an admissions reader. I would want to know, like, what actually happened. And so I would be combing the transcript looking to see where are the C's or, you know, B minuses or whatever happened so I could get a better handle on that. Again, as you point out, the GMAT's fine. And so they could weather this, I think. But, yeah, they just need to kind of have a good explanation. And I don't think they need to go out and take classes, but I just would want to understand, like they need to own the 3.2 and explain it.
So they would explain it succinctly in the optional essay. All schools have an optional essay and that's its purpose. You don't want to be making excuses for whatever the issues you are. You want to provide the context and then you want to, you know, demonstrate that whatever that issue was or is or whatever is not going to impact your dedication to your studies when you're undertaking the MBA.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think this person, there's a lot to like here. I mean, you know, they were went to a good school. They're, you know, college athlete, team captain. The work experience seems interesting. And, you know, as you say, yeah, the goals are a little bit different. You don't see that many people, as you said, in a tech world jumping over to banking, but sounds like they can justify it. And so, yeah, I wish them the best of luck. Should we move on to the next or did you have anything else on this person?
Yeah, I mean, just the only other thing, Graham, and I'll let you comment on this very quickly because I know we're sort of spending a lot of time on this and the intro. They're not doing anything in their extracurricular activity now other than continuing their sort of you know, athletic endeavors like weightlifting and training. Do you see that being a little bit of a hiccup? You know, we're looking at a candidate with great, I think, work experience and really, you know, strong GMAT and various other things. And like you say, team captain, I think, is very good in college and so forth. Is this a potential weakness at the very, very top schools, or do you think you can look beyond this?
I mean, I would want to know more about, yeah, what they do with their free time.
Yeah.
And so, like, it's one thing if they're, I mean, obviously, if they're pursuing, you know, exercise and fitness stuff, are they doing it alone? Are they running races to raise money? Are they, Like, yeah, I just would need to know, is there some structure around it? Because that would help.
Yeah.
If it's just like, yeah, I go to the gym twice a week and go by myself and the rest of the time I'm watching Netflix at home, like that's not good, right? So we'd need to get more info. But it could potentially be a liability. The only thing I will say is it sounds like they were really active in college. So, you know, often schools will recognize that people work a ton, and so they might use the college years as a you know, barometer on whether they're going to be active as an MBA student. But I still think it'd be great if they had some, you know, structure to what they're doing outside of work.
Yeah, it's a very fair point. If you've been a team captain in college, that definitely, you know, is a very positive aspect that can carry forward if you're super busy at work, building and developing your career, and don't have the time to sustain some outside of work activities at this point. So that's a very good point.
All right. So thanks for that person for submitting and for mentioning that they wanted to be featured. I hope this was good advice. Let's move on and talk about Wiretap's candidate number two. So this is a candidate that wants to start this coming fall, or sorry, fall 2021. They're going to be applying this fall. And they're looking at 8 schools. They've got Columbia, Tuck, Harvard, MIT, Kellogg, Stanford, Booth, and Wharton. So kind of a who's who of top schools. they've been working in biotech, research and development. And they're thinking post-MBA of maybe consulting, but also kind of pharma, like staying in that domain. And they put BCG, Bain, and McKinsey for that consulting kind of short-term goal. But they did mention in their notes, they're not set on that. They're just thinking that might be a kind of easy path post-MBA as a starting point. GMAT 740, GPA 3.36, and they have 5 years of work experience located. They want to be on the East Coast, sorry, post-MBA. And I had to laugh. They wrote in their notes, they wrote, first-time caller, long-time listener. So this is someone who's listened to a little bit of radio in their day, which always makes me that makes me happy. But anyway, so they like the podcast. They said they would love to be featured. So here we are. And they mentioned, you know, that they want to basically use an MBA to get from R&D into more of a business function. And the one key thing, there's a ton of info they provided, but the one key thing I wanted to share is that they're actually looking at some, you know, joint degree type programs. So I think they mentioned, you know, the Harvard has a HBS, MBA, MS. We actually, yeah, biotech dual degree. We did that. We did a whole podcast about that program when it was introduced a year ago. So they're looking at that. They're also looking at Wharton Lauder and then some other just straight MBA options. So yeah, you had a lot of back and forth with this person, and you picked them because they actually faced a unique kind of COVID-related challenge in that they were laid off during the beginning of the pandemic. So what do you make of this candidate, and yeah, what do you think they need to do to get into these schools?
Yeah, I think this candidate's got super upside. You know, kind of like the last candidate in the sense that they're clearly smart. You know, they've got a whacking good GMAT. Their GPA is 3.36, but in the sciences or whatever. So I assume strong on that side too. They've done a lot of work in research and developments, but seems like they've had good impact and done well. They got laid off. So this is what really stood out to me. They got laid off due to the COVID-19 situation, but was able to get a new gig, a new situation, relatively quickly, at a higher pay grade, which is all always very good too. And you know, they reckon that they're in a new situation, that they're able to have impact also quite quickly. So I think that's very good, and obviously for folks that are in a similar situation, this is the best outcome you can have, right? You get laid off, that's awful, but you're able to get into another situation. Because for a lot of folks, if you're getting laid off, that's probably symptomatic of your industry shrinking because of COVID-19. So the opportunity to get another situation in a shrinking industry has got to be really difficult. So I got to think this candidate is a bit of a superstar because they were able to get this new gig, Graham. I mean, to me, that's got to be a very positive signal, right? Now, so what's the negative here? Or the potential negative. If I'm an AdCom reader, I'm like, you've gotten into a new situation. Have you been in it long enough to really grow and develop from it? So that's one aspect, and they reckon that they can they can hit on that mark. They hit the ground running. They're able to have some impact. So that's very good. But then the other side of me thinks, you've only just started here. Was it full disclosure that you're now going to leave quite quickly and go off to business school? So they need to be prepared. And I expressed this in our conversation on ApplyWide. They have to be prepared for that conversation, whether it's in the essays themselves, or surely if I'm interviewing this candidate, that's one of the very first questions I'm going to go after. In terms of, is this now the right time, or should you stay in this situation another year, which would be more standard to a new move, 2 years, and then move on to business school?
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, I think the thing that jumps out at me as well is, you know, can they, like, I guess they will be at this new company for a year plus, maybe even as much as a year and a half by the time they would start business school. So that's not the end of the world. Like, I think, you know, but you're right. It does. The problem that I'm thinking of is, like, let's say they go to their interview at HBS in the fall, they will have been in this new role for like 6 months at that point, or maybe a little more. Right. So, and so they always risk getting that question of, okay, so how's the new job? You know, great work getting a new job during COVID-19 and everything. Is it challenging? You know, and they'll say, yeah, it's incredibly challenging. I'm doing amazing things, blah, blah, blah. And then, you know, HBS always runs the risk. This is something they like doing in their interviews, saying like, well, if it's really challenging, then why would you leave, right? It sounds like you're still learning a lot. You know, why not wait another year? so that, you know, you can run into those kinds of problems, at which point you have to say, well, I'm learning a lot, but I can see, you know, a path to, you know, kind of some closure around what I'm, you know, what I'm learning, and I'll be ready, you know, to leave for business school. So that's the thing that jumps out at me. And then the other thing I wanted to mention with this candidate that I'm kind of noodling on is that, you know, I get that the HBS MBA MS in biotech is interesting. It's a new program. And so I think it could be really great as a, you know, give them the science piece plus the, you know, plus the MBA, and you know, I get it, right? It fits with their kind of career plan. But I do wonder, like, it's, you know, you're adding a whole nother degree. And so I want to make sure they really know what direction they want to go in with their career. Because if it's purely a management angle and they've already had some exposure to biotech R&D and they have a lot of that science stuff, then they may not need it. But the other thing that jumped out at me is that they, and it relates, is that, you know, they did a year on a Fulbright. So they're, they have this kind of international angle, and they mentioned Wharton Lauder, which is an entirely different kind of dual degree that's all about, you know, international business. And so I wondered, like, they need to kind of figure this out. And I also, I mean, the thing that struck me most about which school and which type of program they should go after, the thing that struck me the most was, you know, that they didn't mention Wharton HCM at all, Wharton Healthcare Management. So Wharton's on their, it's on their list, but they didn't, they mentioned Lauder. And I think they must know about Wharton's healthcare management program, but I would encourage them to, you know, look into that, because that would probably be the best fit for someone wanting to, you know, work in the business of healthcare and biotech. So anyway, I just mentioned that, but I like this candidate. They got a ton of, I mean, their activities both during college and beyond are really impressive. So yeah, I mean, there's not a lot of weaknesses here. I mean, other than the fact that they've had this recent job juggle. I think this is a great candidate, and they have a cool niche. I actually almost think they shouldn't go with the consulting route, that they should just focus on healthcare. It'll be more unique, help them stand out, because as we know, like, something like 60% of applicants to business school are going to mention consulting. So so that's my take. What do you make of that? I mean, anything you want to add on this person? Because it's an interesting...
Yeah, and I completely agree. And, you know, should they be doing dual degrees and whatever? And again, we mentioned this a little bit on ApplyWire directly. You know, the opportunity with the MBA, it is a generalist degree, but you can pursue, you know, electives, you know, at most universities where you do your MBA, you can pursue electives in any of the colleges at those universities. So if this person wants to take a whole bunch of nerdy courses, absolutely go with it. And you can still do that in the confines of the MBA degree itself.
Yeah.
So doing the healthcare management at Wharton might well make more sense in that regard. But like you say, fantastic upside here. I'm being a little bit over the top, I think, in my sort of potential pushback with this, you know, you've only just gotten this job, so why leave idea? But I just want to make sure this person's ready for that conversation. They say they will be in terms of on the interview, because, you know, when you do ultimately end up going for an interview, you don't want to be stumped by a question.
Right, right.
So absolutely.
Yes.
And this will be top of mind for most interviewers.
Yeah. All right. So let's move on. We have one more candidate this week. It's another ApplyWire entry. And so this is Wiretap's candidate number 3. So this person's looking at 7 schools. They want to start in the fall of 2021. So they're going to be applying this fall. They're looking at Columbia, Cornell, Dartmouth, Harvard, Stanford, Wharton, and Darden. And they have been working in engineering at a big 3 auto company in the U.S. They would love to get into consulting, and they're looking at A.T. Kearney, Bain, BCG, Deloitte, McKinsey. GMAT score 690 and a GPA of 3.05. 6 years of work experience. They're in the Midwest, as you would imagine, since they're working for a U.S. Automotive company. And they would love to end up in New York or Boston after business school. They went to a top 10 private engineering college, and they indicated that they're first generation Asian American and first from their family to go to college. And they said that before working as an automotive engineer, they were in a management training program. And they've had 2 years of experience as a supervisor now of 40 people. They also mentioned they're going to take the GMAT again. They think they can get more in the kind of 730 plus range. They were not happy with that 690. And they're hoping to apply in round 1, but they're wondering, like, gee, if I don't, on my retake, get the score that I need, should I wait for round 2? So that was kind of a question they asked.
Right.
And you had some back and forth with them. And they did, I'll mention, say that they are a big fan of the podcast. So we appreciate that. And obviously, really appreciate them taking the time to post.
Yeah.
But yeah, what do you make of this? Because I think there's some stuff I really like, but then obviously there's some issues with the candidacy. So what's your take on it?
Yeah, we're 3 for 3 with these ApplyWire folks today. That's very good.
Yeah.
Enjoying the podcast. Here's a person. There's 690 GMAT, 3.05 GPA. In engineering, so, you know, that's perceived potentially as being a bit more rigorous than maybe on the liberal outside. But nevertheless, and I shouldn't overemphasize that, Graham, because obviously you're a liberal arts dude. But basically, that highlights two things they need to be doing from the get-go. They're going to retake the GMAT. They've already committed to doing that. They reckon they can push that up to 730, 750 based on their practice tests. If they can do that, absolutely fantastic. I reckon they need to do something about this GPA too, Graham. And this might be a classic example of doing an HBX core type experience or something. To sort of bolster the transcripts, but also show that, you know, whilst they have a bunch of engineering coursework, that they're prepared for that transition in the business realm in terms of the types of material they'll cover in that type of program, or at least take, you know, a couple of classes, get A's in, you know, to enable that transition. So if they could do both of those things and get their applications in early, I think, you know, the candidate has pretty good potential. They're working in the automotive industry. That's obviously very interesting right now. I think they said automotive, right? Yeah, they're an automotive engineer. And that's obviously an industry that's going to be in significant transition over the next several years as we move to more sort of energy efficient sources, you know, and get off petrol and diesel. So I imagine that's a super interesting career path. Should be interesting to ADCOM. So I guess in a nutshell, Graham, they've got a lot to do. But unlike the previous two cases, there's a clear stuff that they can do to get things up to par for targeting the sorts of schools that they're targeting.
Mm-hmm.
Is my point.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, I think if they take the GMAT again and can knock it out of the park, like, you know, 750, that would be fantastic. Because when you have a low GPA, and I know, you know, 3.05 is, it's like not the end of the world in the, like, if you just step away from the MBA admissions process for a second, it's not a bad GPA, but it's below the average at the top schools, which are those schools on their list, right? So But so typically when you have that, you got to counter with an amazing GMAT score. And so ideally like 750, something that counterbalances the below average GPA. I also think that it really depends to me. Like, I was curious to know where they went to school, because I actually went to an undergraduate college, a private college that had an engineering program. Obviously, I was majoring in basket weaving and easy stuff, like you said. But but they had an engineering program, and it was like incredibly rigorous, and no one ever had, you know, you didn't see anybody with like a 3.5. So it depends on the school. Sometimes if this really is like a top, top school that is known for zero grade inflation, then that 3.05 in engineering may look differently than it would have if it was from somewhere else. So I don't know where this person went. And they also first generation, first person to go, you know, to college in their family. So maybe, you know, maybe they have a really great upward trend on their GPA. We don't know that, but that would be good to understand. But I think, yeah, taking the test again, getting a high score, and, you know, it'd be great to see the transcript so we could know, like, oh, go take, you know, accounting and statistics with, you know, MBA math, or, you know, whatever online, or even some, you know, just do it online with an existing university or something, to get, just to show the admissions committee you're ready for this. The other thing that jumped out at me, like you're saying, is they're working in an interesting industry. I mean, I know that, you know, maybe being an automotive engineer is a, you know, it's more of the, you know, kind of the quant type stuff, and they're not, you know, it's engineering, right? They're not necessarily a big time manager, but it seems like because of this training program, they have had, you know, an opportunity to supervise people. So I like the work experience is what I'm trying to say, but I'm also wanting to say that it's unfortunate to me that the goals, even when you ask them, seem a little flat. Like, it's sort of like, well, I want to do consulting, and then I'd like to start my own business using the experience and network I've gained in consulting. And I'm sort of like, wow, you know, automotive is kind of a hot sector, you know, maybe not with the big three, but it's certainly with, you know, Tesla or Uber. I mean, there are a lot of things happening in that space. And I was sort of like, well, maybe they should have, it'd be nice if that thread could follow them going forward. Obviously, if they hate automotive, I'm not telling them to, you know, say something that they can't get behind. But it just would make them a more interesting candidate if their goals were somehow linked in some way to the experiences they've had to date. And if they had cool, innovative ideas for starting a company in that sector, you know. And so I don't mind them doing consulting first. But I just, it seems odd to not play to the strengths of their background to date.
And possibly to follow that thread, consulting in for the automotive sector.
Right. Because
in terms of sort of dotting all the I's, I mean, that would be a very smart move.
Right. And these firms that they've listed that they want to work for, that some of them do a ton of work in the auto industry. So it's like they could do that. And I think these firms would actually like the fact that they've hired someone who's got a top MBA and, you know, whatever it is, 6 years of experience in auto. Right. So anyway, I think that's the main thing. But I really, the thing that makes me nervous is I have this fear that if they don't get the GMAT up and they go through this process with a 690 and a 3.0, they're going to need to adjust that list of schools, which right now, you know, is kind of a top tier. I mean, there are a couple of top 15 schools on the list, but most of them are top 10. Yeah. So it's, they got to think about that. But overall, you know, interesting background. I like, there's a lot of interesting threads here, and I think they can pull it together, especially if they raise that GMAT score.
They supervise 40 people, Graham. That's pretty impressive.
I know. They've never let me supervise that many. I don't know about you.
But... No. No chance. I can't even supervise my dog.
They barely let us supervise ourselves on this podcast. So in any event, so thanks for doing this week. And I wanted to tell you, next week I'm going to be broadcasting from the Alps. So we'll see if I can get an internet connection, and we'll do wiretaps from on my end from the mountains. And I'll keep you posted. But thanks for picking these out. And everyone, stay safe and healthy. And we'll see you in 1 week's time.
Yep, stay safe, everybody. And best of luck. Take care.